Okay, we're in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chav Beis, in the Stone Chumashim, is 558. We're learning about the various different Avedas that the people do. So first we learned if the Kohen Gadol sins, and then it says if the Bezdin makes a mistake and people listened. And this is Asher Nasi Yachta. Asher Nasi Yachta, the Gemara says, refers to a king. Ashenasi yachta, if the ruler sins, thank you. If the ruler sins, and Rashi says, why is the Torah using the word asher? Asher is a very uncommon word. So different mefarshim answer, so much of the Sipurna says, why does it say asher? Asher actually means when. Nasi yachta. We learned it means if, but asher actually means when. So the Sipurna says that why does it mean Asher Nasi Yachta? Because it's inevitable that a leader is going to sin. He's for sure going to sin. He has money and power and everything else. What do you expect him not to sin? So it says Asher Nasi Yachta. It says why does the Torah use the word Asher? Because it means when rather than if. Then you have Rashi's interpretation, which is a very interesting interpretation. Rashi says Asher comes from the word Ashrei. Fortunate is a generation whose leader admits their sin. Like he said, Ashri Adosh Nasi Shalaynesin Lev, Lahavi Kapadasi Al Shigagasi, even for the accidental sins, how much more so for the intentional sins? Okay? So Rashi explains that this is actually a praiseworthy concept of the Nasi that he sins. The Gemara explains that this concept of Nasi is only referring to the king. And this then only applies to the king. Now, the whole concept of Nasi, it's a very interesting thing. Nasi actually means a prince. So, in fact, there's a very interesting argument in the Gemara, because as a rule, Nasi doesn't mean a king. Here the Gemara says it must mean that he has a king. That it refers to the king. But Nasi, generally speaking, refers to the Jewish leader, even though there's not a king. Like in Pirkei Avos, you know, the first parak, it goes the pairs of the tzaddikim, you know, through the evolution of the oral Torah. Sam Shimon HaTzaddik and Yosef ben Yehezi, so it says the first one was the Nasi and the second one was the Av Bezdin, which basically meant in the olden times, the Nasi was the head of the Bezdin and the Av Bezdin was the second in command of the Supreme Bezdin of 71. But Nasi, throughout history, also became the concept of the Jewish leader, even when the Jews didn't have the concept of a king. And it's brought down in Kabbalah Svarim that the word Nasi, Nun Shin Yud Aleph, is an acronym in Rosh Tevis for Nitzutz Shel Yaakov Avinu. Nitzutz Shel Yaakov Avinu means he's a spark of Yaakov Avinu. Just like from the three Ovis, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Yaakov was the one that was the patriarch of the Jewish people. Avram had a Yishmael, Yitzchak had an Esav. The only one that was, so to speak, the patriarch only of the Jewish people was Yaakov Avinu. And therefore it says in Kabbalah that Yaakov Avinu's neshama actually similar to Adam Arishin, because the Gemara says, to be into whatever it means, the Gemara says Yaakov Avinu looked like Adam Arishin.
The Adam had two sons, Cain and Abel, no?
No.
So one was good, one wasn't good, no?
So?
So you're telling me Yaakov, you're comparing with the...
Yaakov, it says that Shufra the Yaakov main Shufra the Adam Arishin. Yaakov Avinu looks like Adam Arishin. What it means in Kabbalistic terms, it means just like Adam Arishin included within him, the neshamas of all generations, all the future generations were all included in Adam Arishin. The same, the Yaakov Avinu included within him the neshamas of all the Jewish people. And therefore, a person who's a Nasi, the leader of the Jewish people, which is, by the way, interesting, the word Asher is the letters of Rosh, which is head. The leader, the Nasi, is actually the Rosh, B'nai Yisrael, which means that they include within him, just like the head is the nerve center of the entire body. So the same thing, the Nasi, the leader, is includes within him the neshamas of all the generations. In fact, even the Rambam says that about a melech, about a king, the Rambam says, the Melech is Lev Kol Yisrael. He's the heart of the whole Jewish nation. the heart of the Jewish people. There's the head and there's the heart. I mean, but the Melech, the Rambam says, is Lev, the heart of the entire people. So Ashenasi Yachta, when the leader himself can realize that he sins and he did something wrong, so there's a fortunate generation that has that person as a leader, so to speak. So what's the din if the Nasi sins? And the pasuk says like this. What happens? Also, achas mikom mitzvah Hashem alikov. He does one of the commandments of Hashem, ashalei yaseno, that he should not be done bishkaga and in accidental. And v'ashem, he becomes guilty. In other words, he taka sins something that he didn't know about it. Just one more thing. They say an interesting thing. They bring down from the mefarshim that why is it fortunate for a generation whose leader can admit his guilt, so to speak? Why is the generation lucky? Because he says that when a leader realizes he's not perfect, then it's not a problem for people to realize they're not perfect, and they also do something wrong. As the English expression goes, to err is human, to forgive is divine. To make an error, that's human. I mean, human being sins. So when the leader can admit their guilt, so how much more so the regular people? But if the leader doesn't admit his guilt, then why should the people admit their guilt? Right? And again, everything is also relative. Even though here it speaks about that he actually committed an aveda that he was told that he was allowed to do it. He did it accidentally, obviously. But when it says, Asher Nasi Yechta, Yechta again, like we said at the beginning, Chet means lacking. The Nasi is lacking. It also refers to the same concept. Okay, so he says, Va'ashim, and he sins intentionally. Or, we'll learn a few psukim and we'll explain it. Or, if the sin became known, it's interesting, Rashi learns, O'hayda, literally means, or, if the sin became known. Now, if the first pasuk says he did a sin that he didn't know, then how did he ever know? So Rashi learns, Oyheida doesn't mean if, but when. Rashi, Oyheida, when he finds out the sin that he transgressed, behavior is karban, he has to bring his karban, sit'izim zocher tamin, a male, unblemished goat. The Mefarshim explain, why does a Nasi bring a male animal when all sin offerings are female? She explains, because male, nothing personal, women, male represents dominance and power. So, because he's a powerful person, the leader of the Jewish people, his carbon also has to show on domination and power, so therefore he needs to bring a male goat as a carbon. As a rule, by regular aveiros, they bring, as we'll learn later, they bring basically a nekeva, a female animal, because a person, when they sin, becomes weakened by sinning. And female is the weaker gender, nothing personal, the weaker gender, and therefore they bring a female. But here, because he's in power, he has to bring the male-dominating animal. What?
Many times the Torah says something like, to that extent, where the male and female has a certain role. So what does it mean when a male is not so strong as far as personality goes, or a woman is strong? What does that mean?
You mean, does the female become male and the male become female? Yeah, it happens.
I know, so what does that mean?
When a person is left-handed, the left hand is their right hand. Okay? So it's a concept. It's not literal. It's figurative. The person's right hand represents the stronger hands. Okay? So the female refers to the weaker. So that's what it is. You can have men with female neshamas and men with women with male neshamas. It happens. Okay. So therefore, the person sinned, the melech sinned, and he has to bring this male carbon. What does he do with the carbon? Again, a lot of these things we learned, we're going to go quickly. Samech yad ha'arish yasoy, he has to lean his hand on the head of the goat. V'shachat, they say, has to be shechted b'mkema she'yishchat of se'elah l'fnei Hashem. In the same place we shecht the carbon elah, which is in the north, we learned. Chatasu, it's a sin offering. Okay, so you have to bring the carbon. It has to be a male goat that has to be complete, and he has to put his hand on it. But in here, like we learned, is where the aved of the kohen begins. The kohen takes the blood with his finger, he takes the blood. V'nasan al kanes mizbach ha'ela, he pours it, he sprinkles it on the corners of the mizbeach. Like we learned, he squirts on the corner where it hits two sides together, and then the opposite corner where it hits two sides together. But over here, if you're interesting, the last korbanos we learned that would squirt the blood facing the pareches. Here not. Here was only on the mizbach ha'ela. Vezdami yishpach, the rest of the blood he spills, and you say the mizbeach ha'ela to the base of the elevating offer, altar. Ve'ez kol chal ba'yakter ha'mizbeach, kichav chelev zevach ha'shlamim, all the fat he pours, it burns on the mizbeach, like the fats of the peace offering, the shlamim. Ve'chipet olav ha'kem ha'chatosi v'nisachlei, and he becomes forgiven. Okay? In the previous times, we learned the Kohen squirts it with a keli. Here, the Kohen actually does it with his finger. Now, what is the definition of Seir Izim, by the way? When he gets to take Seir Izim, is a goat that's in its second year. Halacha says, the Gemara says, Seir Izim means a goat that's 1 year old. It can't be less than a year old. It can't be more than 2 years old. So it has to be, when it's one, between one and two, when it's in its second year, that's called the Seir Izim, that is the age of the carbon. Okay? A bull, though, when the Torah says a par, that's acceptable until the end of the third year. Until the bull turns three. But by goats, the Gemara learns out, that has to be in the second year of the goat's life. And he pours it on the Mizbeach, okay? The southwestern part is where the base is, and the Kohen forgives him. Now, what does it mean? Again, the Sifra, the Medrash says that when the Pasuk says the Kohen has to put the blood and the Kohen will forgive him. It means is when the Kohen is sprinkling the blood on the Mizbeach, he must have in mind that this is the Kapara, the forgiveness for the one who's committed the sin, which in this case is the Melech, the king, the Nasi, that's it. Well, you have to have it in mind. If not, it's no good.
Having something in mind doesn't necessarily mean you have to say it out loud.
Have in mind means you have to have in mind. Now, what happens with the rest of the meat? The Torah doesn't say here what happens, but it's the regular din of a korban chatos. The kohenim get it. Not the owners. The owners get nothing. The kohenim would get all the meat. Notice the blood and the fats, they burned on the mizbeach. The meat was eaten by the kohenim. Lucky guy. Huh?
Barbecue for you.
We'll learn. Certain things are eaten zichrei kohenim, some things to the family. It depends really what type of carbon.
What? Did they sell the meat, the kohenim?
It was only allowed to be eaten by kohenim.
They couldn't sell it.
No. Well, to another kohen you could.
No, to people.
To people. Kohenim, if English, kohenim are not people.
No, to other people, to Israel.
Okay, no, once you give it to Israel, that's fine. No, then that no. That's why they got sick. Here.
How do you know it's the king?
The Gemara learns out that Nasi here means king.
But it doesn't say.
I know it doesn't say Melech. Here it says like this. Here, the Korban Chatos we say every day in Davening, in Ezel Mekayimen, v'necholim lefnim min akloim, that they eat it inside the network of the Beis HaMikdash, lezichrei chuhuna, this is only for the male Kohanim we're allowed to eat this, b'chol Michael, they could eat it with any food, obviously they had to be tahar, they couldn't be tameh, l'yayim v'laylat chatzais, so they ate it the day that it was brought, plus the following night. Now if the Korban was brought Tuesday, the Kohen are allowed to eat it Tuesday, and Tuesday night until midnight. That's it. Only male Kohanim. Now, can they sell it to another male Kohen? Yeah, but he had to eat it inside the Beis HaMikdash. Inside the area of the Beis HaMikdash.
Huh?
They couldn't eat it. They were not allowed to leave it left over. Because when the Torah allotted meat to be eaten, but the Korbanos, it was only allowed to be eaten for the duration, the time the Torah says. If not, it becomes Noisar. And you have to burn it. They have to finish it up. Okay, now, the Kohen didn't eat fish. The animal rights groups did not like the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, now again, a lot of these psukim are the same. We're going to go through quickly until we get to the various parts of it. Now it speaks. Okay, till now we learned if the Kohen Gadol sins, if Bezdin sinned, and if the Nasi, the Melech, sinned. Now the people, as an individual, what?
In doing Chatat, Kapara, and all of those.
Yeah.
We don't have.
Yeah.
We do have the option of money of. Giving
not in those days.
So we have today the fish and the money additional because
only a minik today. But in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, you couldn't say to the Kohen, okay, here's $10, forgive me. Or here's a piece of fish, gefilte fish. Give him gefilte fish. And say, it doesn't work like that. In the old times, you had to bring. Now we're going to learn there was what's called Ashim Toli. Some of it, there were certain kabbanas, by the way. The Torah, it was a sliding scale. If you were wealthy, you had to bring an animal. If you were poor, you were able to bring a bird. If you were very poor, you were able to bring a flower offering. But like these kabbanas, obviously here it doesn't matter because you're talking about the Kohen Gadol and then the Melech, and anyway. But we'll soon, not every carbon was the scale of how much money you had. You had to be. Let me explain to you something. I don't know what it cost in the olden times. But if you, every time we sin today, would have to bring a $200 carbon to the Beis Hamikdash, you know what? We wouldn't sin. It gets expensive to sin.
It's like a
the time of the Beis Hamikdash, yeah, I mean, a ticket, yeah? You know, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, it was expensive to sin. Yeah. Like, so people didn't sin.
The Beis Chano that the kids, they teach that they are asking $180 being back each day.
They should ask for more. Okay. V'nefesh achas techta b'shkaga. Now, what happens if an individual sins? Mi'am ha'aretz from the nation. So, ba'seisa how achas mi mitzvahs Hashem ha'shalei se'a sen of ha'ashem, doing one of the mitzvahs that Hashem said not to do and he became guilty. This, again, refers to a aveda that the punishment, if you did it b'meizid, would be kodis. The Hashem, kills you early. And if you do it b'sheigig, you have to bring a karm chattas. Not every aveda do you bring a karm chattas. Like, for instance, if somebody ate chazer accidentally, the punishment for eating chazer intentionally is not karis. It's malchus. So then there wouldn't be a karm chattas. A karm chattas is only for an aveda that if you did it b'mezid intentionally, the punishment would be karis. The Hashem would make you die earlier. That's the only time the Gemara learns out of these types of avedas. Or like we said, Oyheda El of Chatosi, when he knew about the sin that he did, behavi karbanin is to bring a carbon sidus izan tamim in the keva, a goat, but female goat. Like we said, only the king brings a male goat. The other sin offerings are female. Al Chatosi Shechata for the sin that he committed. And again, Vesamach Ziyadar Shechatas, he put your hands in the Chatas, Shechat is Chatum came Oilo, you shechted, where the Oilo shechted north. Again, the Kohen takes the blood, squirts it on the Mizbeach. You remove the fats. Like the fats we remove from the carbon shlamim. For a peace offering for Hashem. And the Kohen forgives him for what he does. But what's interesting over here, even though the Mefarshim don't talk about it, here it says Reich Nechayach Lashem again. By the Melech, it doesn't say Reich Nechayach Lashem. By the Kohen, it doesn't say Reich Nechayach Lashem. But by a simple Jew who brings a carbon, Hashem says, it's Reich Nechayach. It's a good, appeasing smell for Hashem because Hashem accepts the carbon and the Kohen gets the forgiveness for him. That's if they bring a goat. Now what happens if they bring a sheep? Because they're allowed to bring either a goat or a sheep. Now, we'll see one difference between the sheep and the goat, why the Torah has to repeat the whole psukim, even though it's really basically the same law. It says, in keves yavi karbana lechatos, what happens if he brings a sheep? Again, the keva tamima yiviani has to bring a female, complete no blemishes. Samach yasyod erei shachatos, the shachatay se lechatis yishachtit, bimkei ma sheyishchatos ha'ela, v'loka ha'kayin midam ha'chatos be'etzpoi, he puts take the blood of the karbon chatos, and also nakan his mizbach ha'ela, he puts it in the corners of the mizbeach, v'es kol dama yishpech ha'yisayd ha'mizbeach, and all of it the rest of the blood he puts in the base, That kochel be yasi, he removes the fats, like the, you remove the fats of the shlamim. Vehikter eitzem akenem izbech, he burns the fats. Vechiped, all of akena chatasa, shechata, v'nisloch, and he is forgiven. Now, the only difference is... Right. Now, he says the two animals are mentioned separately. The only difference between the two is that the sheep's tail is offered and the goat's tail isn't. And that's why... Why? Because God said so. I mean, this whole thing doesn't make sense. No, but it says, because if you look at the psukim, it's the same exact laws of the sheep and the goat. So the Torah could have said, instead of doing an extra five psukim or four psukim, the Torah could have just put them both together, if you bring a goat or you bring a sheep. So the Gemara says, because we learned before by the Shlomim, there's a difference between a goat and a sheep. By a sheep, you bring the tail also to burn, as part of the on the Mizbeach, and by a goat you don't. And because of that difference, the Torah separates the two to show that that is the halachic difference between the
but
two.
The goat doesn't have that big of a thing.
Correct. But it doesn't matter if it's that big or small. The Torah says, listen, this whole thing doesn't make sense. And like we discussed already at the beginning, what's the Reach Necheach Shamarti V'Naser Etzeini, that you do it even though it has absolutely no sense. It doesn't make any logic, this whole thing of Karbanis. Sometimes Hashem says, just by doing it, because I said so, rectifies the fact that you did a sin because you went against what I told you to do. The whole concept of Naveira is Hashem told you to do something or not to do something, you did it anyway, right? So part of the forgiveness is to do something which is totally irrational. Because what are you doing? You're listening to Hashem for no reason at all. You sin by not listening. So now the kapod is to listen to Hashem, even though it doesn't make sense.
So there's the
one. Okay, I'm saying, but why did Hashem say to do it this way or that way? That I can't answer you.
But still, the Reach
Nechayach, it says it by the first part, it doesn't say by the second one, but it refers to both together. The Torah doesn't have to repeat that detail. Okay, now this is a more detailed laws. Parakeh. V'nefesh kisechta, and this is speaking about a different type of a sin. Until now we learned, Parakeh, page 560, all the way at the bottom of the page. Okay, now we went fast, now we're going to slow down a little bit. Okay, nefesh kisechta, if a nefesh will sin. Until now we learned about transgressing a sin, that if you did it intentionally, you get karis, and now you don't if you did it accidentally, you have to bring a karm chatas. Now the Torah is going into different types of detailed sins that demand a different type of a carbon. Okay? And we'll explain what the dinim are. The nefesh kisachtof, a nefesh will sin. The shama kol ola, and a listen of a demand of an oath. He's a witness, he knows, he saw. Im lo yagid, if he doesn't tell, he's going to bear his sin. This then refers to as follows, as Rashi and the Gemara explain. A guy knew testimony. And this is speaking about monetary testimony. Meanwhile, okay, if there's a monetary dispute between two people, I say I lent you $1,000, you say no I didn't. And there's a witness that saw it. The witness that saw the testimony. And the witness doesn't want to come to testify, for whatever reason. And the guy who needs the witness says to him, I want you to swear that you are, that is what the testimony is. He says, I swear that I didn't see it. So he swore falsely. What was he swearing falsely? That he saw testimony, or he knows of testimony, and he didn't testify. That's the punishment of this carbon that the Torah is going to be speaking now. This is one of the few sins that the Torah is discussing now, what the certain carbon that they have to bring. Yeah, but he can't. There's a din. Im lo yagid v'nasa aveinei, the Torah says, now I have to explain this din about testimony, which is very interesting. And then we'll understand the halacha better of what's actually going on over here. Normally the Torah says, Al pi shnei edim yakum davar. Okay, apishnei edim and shleish edim yakum davar. According to normally in halacha, you need two witnesses to testify. If two witnesses testify, I'm talking now total monetary, we're not talking about criminal things, monetary issues. If I say you owe me $1,000 and you deny it, and I bring two witnesses that you owe me the money, that is the strongest testimony, and if the witnesses check out to be kosher, you know, the Bezin would check them out, do a chakir or drisha, questions and answers to make sure they're not lying, they're not relatives, whatever the din is, that's the strongest thing. The only thing stronger than the testimony of two witnesses in monetary things is admission of owning, of owing.
What?
Admission.
No.
If I admit in Beis Din that I owe you $1,000, that's even stronger than witnesses. That means if witnesses come along and say, you don't, and I say, yes, I do, which is uncommon. Can you just check? But the bottom line is, Haidos Baldin, Kameya Eidem Dami. The Gemara says the admission of a person, only a monetary thing. In sins, if a guy admits guilt of sin, Bezdin doesn't accept it at all. Okay, and there's a lot of reasons in halacha, because it says Adam Kadav Eitzel Atzmei, a person is a relative to himself. How could you testify on yourself if you're related to yourself? But by monetary issues, the Rishenim and Achreinim explain that a person can obligate himself something he's not obligated to. That means even though L'cheira, two witnesses say no, and the strongest power in Teira is two witnesses. So how can a guy go against the witnesses? The witnesses say, you don't owe the money. And I come along and say, I do owe the money. How can I go be against witnesses? The answer is, because I can obligate myself something that I'm not really obligated for. In other words, the Torah says you're not obligated because witnesses say no. But I can obligate myself to something. The Torah says I don't have to pay. Okay? So in monetary issues, you have like this. Admission of guilt. Not a guilt. Admission of owing. Of damages.
Admitting.
For instance, if I admit that I broke your window, and two witnesses say, no, somebody else broke the window, I still would have to pay. Okay? Because I'm obligating myself to pay. So that case, that is a strong testimony of the person's guilt. Now, what happens if I admit in front of witnesses that I owe money? I admit in front of witnesses that I owe money. Those witnesses in monetary laws can go to Beis Din to testify that I admitted. Okay? So this case basically would be if the other guy heard that I admitted in front of two witnesses that I owe the money, then later I come to court to deny it. Right? And the guy says, 1 minute, the witnesses, you know, come, you heard him testify, you admit that he owes the money, and the witness said, you know, I don't want to get involved. He said, I want you to swear then. And they swear, we don't know anything. Either they didn't see the loan, or they didn't hear the admission. And then they realize they wanted to do tshuva, so you have to bring this carbon.
So when it's two witnesses, though, that heard him admitted, they have to both have heard it at the same time, or they could have heard it...
Not in monetary laws.
So it could have been two separate incidents.
Correct. Now, two witnesses in Torah law extract money. Like I said, if I say you owe me $1,000 and I have two witnesses saying that you owe me $1,000, that's it. You have to pay me $1,000. What happens if there's only one witness? One witness in monetary issues, meaning I say you owe me $1,000, you deny it. I don't have two witnesses. I have one witness that says you owe me the $1,000, either because they saw the loan, or they heard me admit, or you admit, I mean, that you owe him the money. So what's the din? One witness obligates the person to swear against the witness. It's a biblical oath. This is one of the three biblical oaths. Shomrim, Made the b'mixis, and shvus eidechod. If a guy admits, I say you owe me $1,000, you say no, I owe you $500, there's a biblical oath. A shamer was watching an animal and it was stolen or lost, he has to swear, that's also a biblical oath. The third biblical oath is the shvus of an eidechod. one witness testifies that you owe the money. So Bezin cannot extract money based on the testimony of one witness. It's not powerful enough in Torah to extract money. You need two witnesses to extract money. But what it does do, it makes you swear that you don't owe me the money. And if you swear that I don't owe you the money, going against the witness, then you don't have to pay.
And then how is the witness perceived? Is he perceived as having told an untruth?
No. No.
Somebody's telling something.
Well, let's leave it out who's lying.
So there's no such thing as perjury.
What happened? No, there is plenty. Now, what happens if you can't swear against the witness? I'll give you an example. I say, you owe me $1,000. You say, you know what? I don't remember. I don't know. Any day. I have one witness that says, you owe me the money. Now, one witness can't extract money. But one witness can make you swear. But you can't swear against the witness. Because the witness says, you owe him the money. Against the witness would mean, I don't owe you the money. Right? The problem is you can't say I don't owe you the money because you say I don't know. How can you swear? You can swear I don't know. That's not against the witness. You have to swear against the testimony of the witness. So then the din is miteich shein yochel lishava mishalim. Because you can't swear, you have to pay. The Gemara tells a very interesting story. It's called Nascha de Rababa. It's famous Gemara in Bar Basra. Nascha de Rababa. The Rambam is in a Shulchan brings it down. A guy. I come into your house, there's a naschah, is a becher, a silver goblet. I come into your house, and I steal...
It's mine.
I steal a goblet from you. A kiddush cup. I go to your house and take a kiddush cup. One witness testifies that you stole it. Bezin comes to me and says, why you stole a becher, give it back. I said, what do you mean? Of course they took it, but it's mine. I didn't steal it. It's mine. Yeah? So what's the din? The problem is like this. There's one witness say you took it. So what do you have to swear? That you didn't take it. You have to swear against the witness. Right? If the witness says you stole it, so what do you have to swear? I didn't take it. You can't swear you didn't take it because you said you took it.
Yeah. You swear that you didn't steal it.
No, you have to swear against the witness. The witness says you took it.
Wouldn't they go back to the witness and make the witness
No. So the din is, you have to pay. Because you have an obligation to... Then there's a doozier case than this. It's called Chen V'ni Al Pinkasi. It's also a story in the Gemara. Chen V'ni Al Pinkasi. Chen V'ni Al Pinkasi means, I have workers that work for me. Okay? I owe them salary, $1,000. For the workers that work. I don't have any money. I go to the storekeeper. In those days, there were the banks, yeah? Go to the storekeeper and say, listen, do me a favor. Pay my workers $1,000. And I'll pay you back $1,000. Let's pay, pay them, and I'll pay you back. That's what happens. The workers come to the boss and say, we never got paid. The storekeeper says, I paid them. The owner doesn't know. Right? So the storekeeper is asking the boss for the money. He says, I paid them. The workers are asking for the money because you never paid me. So there's two people demanding money from this guy. This guy doesn't know. The boss doesn't know if he gave him or not. So what do? So the storekeeper swears that he paid them the money. They swear they never got the money and both collect from the boss.
You better run your business
better, yeah. Even though l'cha'eda, somebody's swearing falsely over here.
Yeah,
both can't be right. That's what you got to do. Anyway, so LaPerl, coming back to this din over here, and that, by the way, this is even one witness. V'hu aid. It's speaking about not two witnesses. This din is speaking one aid. It's like he says, v'shamal kol olam, he heard the curse. And it says, olam meaning is an oath. But, huh? Because, well, the Mefashim explained, so why is it called a curse? Okay, because lapel, when you swear falsely, the Torah later on curses you for swearing falsely. So that's why, by swearing falsely, the Torah calls it the Allah. Another thing they bring down, another reason, that they bring down, that because the Gemara says, any judge that judges a proper judgment becomes a partner with Hashem in creation. So this guy, by not testifying and swearing falsely, wrecked the proper judgment, and therefore he's cursed for destroying the world that God built through judgment. In other words, the judges, by paskin incorrectly, become a partner with Hashem in creation. By you refusing to testify and then swearing falsely, so you're wrecking and ruining the Hashem's creation. So this is, the thing is like this. It's like he says, I first deals with a witness who has taken such an oath and then admits that he lied. Because the litigant says, go swear for me, in Bezdin. Or outside of Bezdin at least, swear. And the guy says, I don't want to. And he doesn't want to testify. He wants him to swear. He swears falsely that, and he lied that he doesn't know. So then he has to bring this carbon that we're going to see. Or that's one case. Or another case is nefesh shetiga b'chol davar tamei, a person that touched something tamei, or benivlas chayet tameya, or he touched the carcass, the dead body of an impure animal, a beast. Or benivlas behemoth tameo, or the carcass of a dead animal, which is tamei. Or benivlas sheretz tamei, or he touched a bug, which is tamei. V'nela mimenu, and he forgot about it. He didn't know about it. V'tamei v'ashem, and he forgot about it.
What is v'nela mimenu?
I'll explain in a second. And he becomes guilty. Because what happens, what he did was, either he went into the Beis HaMikdash, or he ate hegdish. Now the person became tummy by touching these dead carcasses, which he doesn't know. So it says like this, v'nela mimenu, what is the expression, he forgot? If you never knew, it's not forgetting. Okay, what does the Torah say? You forgot you were tummy. If a guy became tummy and didn't know about it, and went into the Beis HaMikdash, and then found out he was tummy, that's not what the Torah is saying here. That sin is forgiven by the communal carbon musaf that they brought. This is a different case. The Torah says he forgot that he became tamei, meaning he became tamei, he knew he was tamei. And then he forgot that he was tamei and went into the Beis HaMikdash. That's why it says, v'nela mimenu. He touched it. V'nela mimenu, he forgot that he was tamei. Otherwise, he can't say the word he forgot. V'utamei v'ashem, and he's tamei, and he sinned. Or, a similar case, kiyiga, or kiyiga betumas adam, or he touched the tum of a person, l'chol tumase sheyidma, any type of tamei, tumma that he would get in contact with, not only a dead body, there's, different tumas that people have, zav, nida, zava, those various different types of tumah. L'chol tumaseh sheyitma ba, v'nela mimeno, v'yada v'ashem, and he didn't know, and he sinned. So the Torah is just saying a bunch of different sins that all have the same carbon to bring, and as we're going to discuss, this is called the carbon eila v'yoreid, meaning this is the carbon based on your financial statements. Whether you have to bring an animal, a bird, a flower offering. These are eila v'yoreid, mean up and down, depending, what your status is as far as. So the first one is a witness that swore falsely, that he didn't know testimony, and he did, and he lied. Or a person that became tamei, knew he was tamei, forgot he was tamei, and went into the Beis HaMikdash. Because if he knew that he was tamei, and went into the Beis HaMikdash, it's death by Hashem. It's not carbon. This is speaking, the guy did not know. He knew he was tummy, then forgot, and then went into the Beis HaMikdash or ate korbanos. Or nefesh ki sishava levati b'sfasayim, a person will swear expressing with his lips, lahara lahetiv, to do good or bad. I'll explain this whole thing in a second. Asher yivatei adam b'shvua v'nela mimano, that a person swore and he forgot about it. V'yada v'ashim lachas meila, if he sinned and he found out about one of these three sins. What is the case over here? A person swore falsely by making a vow and an oath. A guy says, I didn't eat something when he did. Or a guy says he didn't when he did. Or for the future, a guy will swear that I will not eat meat, and he ends up eating meat. A guy says I won't go somewhere, and he goes somewhere. Whether it's for good or for bad, the guy made a vow, and then by mistake, he did it, what he did wasn't supposed to do. In other words, let's say he went to the park, and he swore I didn't go to the park, and then he realized he did go to the park. Or in the future, a guy swears, I will not eat meat, and then he ends up eating meat. So basically, it was a vati b'sasayim. It was, now, the Gemara learns out, the din is, the Torah says clearly, by the way, levati b'sfasayim. That means a vow is only effective if you verbally say it. If you thought it, it's not a vow. That means if a guy thinks in his mind, even mentally, he swears, I will not eat meat. And later he eats meat, that doesn't apply to this din at all. Because he never said it. He never made a vow.
Only the witness when he
said it? No.
He has to swear.
Huh?
He has to swear.
No, the guy did swear.
He
said, I swear, whatever, in the name of Hashem, that I didn't go to the park.
But she said a witness. What is it?
Not, here's not a witness.
This is a court case already?
No, she asked me, do you need a witness to know that he made the oath? You don't have
the oath.
You don't need the witness for that.
But how do you know he
made it? Yeah,
he admits. He realized that he did something wrong. What?
So the person says they're not going to eat chicken, and then they go to somewhere.
No, it has to be a vow. It doesn't say I'm going to eat chicken.
A
guy makes a vow.
Okay, a vow not to do something.
And then he eats it.
No, but then asks somebody, am I doing what I said I wasn't going to do? And they say no, but he really did do it.
That the same thing applies. The guy still swore falsely.
So even if you make a promise that's just between you and Hashem and you verbalized it, that's what you're saying.
Right.
Could be that, or if it's in front of witnesses.
Now, what happens if a guy swears, you bring down over here from the psukim. What happens if a guy swears that he will eat chazer, which the Torah forbids?
So
he can. It's not a vow. It's called shvur shav. It's not this din of shvur that brings a carbon. It's called shvur shav. Or if a guy says, I'm going to jump to the moon, which is an impossible thing to do, that's not this shvur. This shvur that we're talking about over here is something that the guy could do or not do. He could eat meat or not eat meat. Or he could have gone to the park or didn't have gone to the park. And he swore falsely past, present, future, for good or for bad. Things that were possible and permissible for him to do, but he didn't do it.
What do you mean by for good or for bad? What do you mean by for bad? You just said that you can't make a vow to do something.
Let's say smoking is bad. The guy swears he's going to smoke.
Okay, so as long as it's not an avera, but...
Correct.
But it's for,
right.
It's for bad.
Swearing.
Right. Like he says, not to eat something which is harm, or to eat something which is good.
But it has to be with the swearing.
Correct.
That's why we slow him down.
I don't understand why it's such a bad thing if he's told he's not doing the wrong thing.
It's not bad as long as he doesn't break it.
Someone tells him he's double checking, he doesn't know, right? He says, let's say he says he swears he's not going to eat chicken. He goes to a house and he says, is there chicken on my plate? They say, no, there's no chicken. He eats, and they say, oh, you ate the chicken.
So then, if that's the case, maybe this then doesn't apply, I don't know.
Because you could go to a restaurant and say, I just ate.
But the bottom line is still ate chicken, I don't know. I don't know what the din would be in that case. Okay, what? Yeah, but is it Shavuos Bitoy? Is it Din of Shavuos? Is it Kabbalah Leviyadin or not? Yeah, but it's not Chorim Chatos. Chata is only on a lav that's kodes. Okay. Anyway. Okay, he brings down at the bottom interesting. The Chayzer Lubin said that there's two ways of people. What does in a deeper sense? What are these psukim referring to? Lahara lahitiv. He said there's two ways that people serve God. Some people serve Hashem by fasting and torturing themselves and denying themselves. That's called lahara. For bad. Then there are person lahitiv. They eat and drink. They marry and they do it all of Hashem Shemayim. The covered Shabbos Kodesh, you know, they do it all. They'll eat the Torah says that's lahatif. That's the good things. So he says, which one of the paths is better? So it says not to deny. It says the Yirmiyah Navi says they are wise to do evil, but they do not know how to do good. They are wise how to do evil, but they're not. In other words, of the two, the higher way is not to break world. But utilize world for the sake of serving Hashem. So that could be in two ways. You know, there's lahara or lahativ, there could be good, there could be bad. You know, it could be one of two ways that, in fact, you could take even to add on what he said, that we know that the neshama is mashbi and eisei tihi tzadik v'al tirasha. The neshama is given an oath, the Gemara says, to be a tzadik and not to be a rasha. So a nefesh kisi shava, the nefesh is given the oath. Lahara lahativ. Sometimes it could be to deny pleasures of the world. Sometimes it could be lahativ to do. You have two ways of serving Hashem. You could break world, or you could elevate world. So that's, he says, is homiletically what the Pasuk is talking about. Okay, so in Pasuk he says like this. So there are three sins over here. There's the sin of Edom, that Ed that swore falsely. There's the guy that was Tamei, knew he was Tamei, forgot he was Tamei, and ate or went into the Beis HaMikdash. And the third case is a guy made a vow and broke it. Okay, whether it's past, present, or future. So he says, what's the din? If a person will sin regarding one of these three avedas, he has to confess that he sinned. In other words, after he brings the carbon, this is the way the Ramban learns, after he brings the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, and he puts his hands on the carbon, remember last time we learned, do you put your hand on the carbon? Here, in addition to putting your hand on the carbon, while you're putting the hand on the carbon, you need to confess the sin that you did. Part of the concept is to confess the sin that you did. What?
That's between you and the Kohen that's doing...
Nobody's there except you, the Kohen, and God.
Okay. And the animal.
And the animal.
Dead.
It's still alive.
No, it's not...
Well, it will be dead.
No, first you shecht it, then you do samach yodet. No, I'm sorry. The smich is when it's alive, and then...
Yeah,
then
you push it in.
It's a high level for somebody to come there and say, no, well, I did.
Yeah, well, the thing is it's between you and the Kohen, so nobody else knows why you're bringing that to them, because there's so many different carbons that animal could be used for, so it's really only between you and the Kohen.
If somebody... It's too late to get into all the details now. If somebody will remind me next week, Mirtz Hashem, I will discuss the importance of confession. I mean, if you mean it in the heart, and God knows, and He's the one that you need the forgiveness from, why in the world do you need to confess it verbally? And sometimes the Gemara says it's good to confess privately,
right,
and it's wrong to confess publicly, mm-hmm, and yet on Yom Kippur everybody's screaming Al Chet, and everybody's doing it publicly.
But everyone's together.
Everyone's together, we're all in the same boat.
Right.
So, again, if somebody will remind me next week, I'll explain the whole explanation why confession is an integral part of tshuva is actually vidui dvarim.
But it goes without saying that we need to confess.
No, but today I understand, but like in those days when you would confess to something, you might die for it.
No, it's be, no. The,
I'm not saying. I mean, just, we're talking about certain things that are.
If you confessed in Bezdin that you killed somebody, you don't get punished. Bezdin sends you home.
There was other things. You said there was something.
No, this is it. You're bringing the carbon for the aveda you did. So Hashem says, while you bring the karma, I want you to confess the sin that you did and why you what you why you're bringing the karma.
But weren't there some sins that you would die for if you admitted?
No.
Interesting.
Only money. Well, no, a person never dies by confession.
Even if you kill or do something.
You want to confess and you really.
What's his name? No, what's the big professor? The big professor in Harvard, no? Dershowitz. I was at a Dershowitz law conference. So Dershowitz said the classic example of what they teach you in law ethics. On day one of law ethics, is the following scenario. A guy comes to a priest to confess a sin. Okay? And the guy confesses to the priest, it says like this. There's this guy sitting on death row for killing somebody, and he's convicted to get killed because he committed a murder. Mm-hmm. I know that that guy didn't do it. How do I know the guy didn't do it? Because I did it. And he confesses to the priest. Mm-hmm. Now, officially, it's private between the priest and the confessor, mm-hmm. right? So the shaila, they ask in law ethics, should the priest tell the court what the guy confessed or not? Because if he does, he's breaching the privacy between the priest and the person. But if he doesn't, an innocent person is going to die. So what is the ethical answer in law? In Torah, I'll tell you some other time, not now.